The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hello, everyone. Dwayne's here. I'll turn it over to him in just a minute. But first, I want to go through the protocol slides for you. Most of you know how to do this already, and I don't see anybody who's not got that. So I think we're good there. You'll have a mic here. Everybody is muted right now. And when we open it up to questions, raise your hand. It's over here. And then we will unmute you to allow you to answer the questions or to ask the questions. Please, when you're finished talking, mute yourself again. You do that just by hitting your microphone right here. You can tell if it's muted. It's red when it's muted. It's green when it's not. Same with the arrows. If you have a green up arrow, it means your hand is down and you have the ability to put it up. If you have a red down arrow, it means that your hand is up. Sometimes when we've got a conversation going, you may put your hand up and it may be a little while before we get to you. Dwayne's got a lot of stuff to go through, and he will pause at several points to ask if you have any questions. So please hold your questions until he asks for them. Okay, and then if you want to type a question, you can do that. If you don't see the drop-down box where you can type it, that means it's a plus, and all you have to do is hit it, and it will become a minus, and it'll give you the drop-down box. You just type your question in there. Okay? So, Dwayne, over to you.
Okay, thank you. It's a joy to be here today and to share some insights of the ageless wisdom. I want to give my appreciation to BL and Rose and Michael and the whole Moya Federation for making this possible. I'm going to recapitulate just a little for any of those who missed our first session. Is there anyone that cannot see my screen?
I can't see it.
Okay, she can't see. BL is...
And so I'm on two different computers. Yeah, okay. No, we can't see. There we go. Now we can. Okay. Thank you.
Out of the void comes light. One of the least understood and explored aspects of the ageless wisdom is motion. And until you see many of these symbols, charts, and tabulations in motion, it's somewhat difficult to understand how energy and force operate on the inner planes, how they build, how they sustain themselves, and then ultimately how they're destroyed. We want in this series of presentations to be able to show the ageless wisdom teachings through new tabulations and charts that may have already been given by H.P. Blavatsky and D.K., to mention a few, but in color and, again, in an animated form. Alice Bailey mentioned that after 1975, there was going to be a major revelation going out from the hierarchy via the radio. And any of you who are astrologers know that Uranus expressing rays 1 and 7 really lie behind much of all exoteric expressions of an electrical nature. And this is particularly relevant to the internet and the electronic high-speed highway. Alice Bailey mentioned that this revelation going out after 1975 was going to be via the radio. Well, we know since the radio, we've had the television, and we've had all these modern communication developments, such as the information highway and the internet. So it only seems logical to assume that any revelations will continue along those lines and will be expanded through these new technological avenues. One of the keynotes, as the opening page outlines, is awakening the higher mind and the intuition. However, I have to throw a cautionary note into that, in that unless you have done the preliminary building with the lower mind, technically you have not really won the right to move into the higher mind and into the intuition, because both of those new and dynamic levels of perception require a good foundation, a good understanding, often of a lot of technicalities. But as the quote suggests that you can see up on the screen now, we have to also be careful not to overdevelop the lower mind, because it can hinder cooperation and contact with the more subtle evolutions such as the devas. And we know that the devas are an intimate part of the reappearance of the Christ program and the externalization of the hierarchy. They bring healing energies and all types of force that would otherwise not be available. So again, we need the mind as the foundation, but we need to understand that it is love and opening the heart that really attracts and gives the ageless wisdom teachings their warmth and magnetism. And if we're not careful, we can build these huge thought forms that are very glowing with their own light, but again, they can shut out some of these more subtle alignments. One of my favorite quotes as we move into this session is that the master takes a group of people with fixed ideas, which they think they are entirely correct, being the best and highest they've been able to grasp, and with the conviction that they have reached a point, they have registered certain spiritual values and concepts where they have evolved their own formulations of truth and where they are eagerly demanding the next step. Now, my attempt is not to blast participants wide open, but anybody who reads these ageless wisdom teachings and does the meditations and studies them cannot help but be opened dynamically at times and sequentially at other times. And it can sort of challenge our sense of what the teachings are about and in what we know. So in a sense, this is one of the motives of presenting the ageless wisdom, as I earlier outlined, in new and creative ways. It's not just the clarity of the teachings we are attempting to present here, but to present them in a new and dynamic way that will demand recognition through the high astral Buddhic field and the higher mind, in addition to simply the lower mind and its ability to amass more information. Okay, the first area that I'd like to begin is what DK calls the law of correspondences. And I'm going to read the quote because it's very powerful, and I really won't do it justice by paraphrasing it or even putting it into my own words. We must resign ourselves to the fact that the only way in which we can find the clue to the mystery of the rays, systems, and hierarchies lies in the study of the law of correspondences or analogy. It is the one thread by which we can find our way through the labyrinth, and the one ray of light that shines through the darkness of the surrounding ignorance. H.P. Blavatsky, in The Secret Doctrine, has told us so, but as yet, very little has been done by students to avail themselves of that clue. In the study of this law, we need to remember that the correspondence lies in its essence and not in the exoteric working out of detail as we think we see it from our present standpoint. So once again, we're attempting to show the relationship of the macrocosm with the microcosm in its broad and general connotations. And the details are important, but they are either already known or they can be worked out later. To quote the Tibetan again, we must see the amazing sequence of events that we are about to undertake. And as we move forward on the path of initiation. Now, before we actually get into this chart, I'm going to give one more quote by the Tibetan, and then we'll tie the charts together. Owing to the constant movement everywhere inherent in the solar system, in the zodiac, onward, interior, and revolving, some idea can be grasped of the intricacy of the entire pattern. A further aid to this grasping of this essential beauty of coordinated and organized movement and its power to qualify and condition the entire universal pattern can be gained by those students who have studied somewhat the various triangles to be found in the etheric body of man through the interrelation of the seven centers to which I have referred elsewhere in my various books. So when we study this chart that I have used sort of consistently through all of my work with the Moya School, you see outlined all of the major centers of the inner etheric body and their astral and mental correspondences. And when we can understand how all these centers, all these triangles, which are activated at different initiations, can be connected to this chart, which is by our brother Starling David Hunter III, we begin to understand that quote. We must see the amazing sequence of events or alignments so that we can find ourselves breaking through the rings past not, of our confining walls and soaring to new heights. Now, this is a wonderful chart done by Starling that indicates the relationship of a number of star systems and constellations and how they relate to the different sacred planets and then down through the hierarchy. Christ, humanity, the Maha Chohan, Nukubu world servers, and down into the three lower kingdoms. This is not complete. He has done other wonderful work through his compass books, and they really require further clarification. But for our purposes today, we want to show that relationship. And again, I'm using my cursor from the microcosm, that's each one of us, with all of our chakras in the different stages of development. Again, looking at Starling's series of triangles, where we are projecting over time as we undergo initiation to these higher places of power and principles. These are the great prototypes of all that happens down here. Now, I'm going to sort of simplify this a little bit because it really, the law of correspondence in the law of analogy are, according to the Tibetan, infallible if followed with any occult scientific clarity. And what you're looking at here, of course, is the seven rays. And you have them in text form with their number on the right. And then on the left, you have the seven numbers with the seven colors and their seven subplanes. Now, when the veils part and we undergo initiation, what happens is we contact through these alignments and meditations and visualizations, higher correspondences of these lower levels, whether they're rays or planes or bodies. And the same coloring that we find on the physical etheric can be found on the astral. If you view this chart from the bottom up, from the astral to the mental, to the buddhic, to the atmic, to the monadic. And each ray or plane revealing a more potent form of spiritual life. So it's a good chart just to get a feel for in the use of color and light, remembering all entry into initiation is entry into light. And within light, we find greater light. Here's another one that is similar, but with a few variations. The human constitution with its chakra system, symbolized by the little discs, and then the solar life above it, becoming expanded, more luminous, and then, of course, it goes into the galactic and the universal. What is particularly unique about this chart, and then we're going to open up the conversation to questions, is that on the left-hand side, you have the four higher subplanes of the human physical etheric, and you have the four higher solar ethers of the Logoic, Monadic, Atmic, and Buddhic plane that parallel those four human etheric ethers. Now, what the Tibetan is saying here is that when you fully understand the Buddhic principle, which is symbolized by the color yellow at the bottom left, your etheric body on the fourth subplane will glow a beautiful purple. When you are able to push your perceptions up to the atmic plane, symbolized by the green disc on the far left, your next higher subplane, actually it's the third from above down to make it a little easier, will glow a lighter purple or violet. And then on a monadic level, when you are able to perceive in the upper triad that one monadic life, your etheric body, second subplane counting from above down, will glow a light violet. And then, of course, on the logoic plane, symbolized by the orange red on the upper left of the bottom, your etheric body will glow a glorious translucent lavender. Now, we've been told by the Tibetan that the seventh ray devas make up the higher subplanes of the physical etheric in man, and the three lower subplanes are dominated by involutionary elementals. But this is how important the violet devas are, and this is how important being able to visualize the right hue in the human constitution, and then later the correct hue in the upper triad, not only on soul levels, which is certainly important, but in the upper triad. So before we get too far along here, are there any questions on any of these charts or the commentary? Go ahead.
I don't see any hands right now. Or any questions. They're all thinking real hard because these are some great slides.
Well, it's become very clear to me, and in some respects, I've been a very slow learner with the Angelus Wisdom teachings because I was so englamored with the Eastern mystical type of approach. It's taken me a while to fully comprehend the statement by DK that it is the second ray student who approaches initiation and comprehension through the eye and through visualizing things. And if any of you have studied, well, this is true of all major spiritual traditions, but I'm thinking of Tibetan Buddhism more than any at this time. They are big into visualization. They have these deities, they have these symbols, and when you can visualize them with the right focus or interior concentration, it moves energy. Energy follows thought, and it's very powerful. Now, there are some types that approach the Ageless Wisdom teachings, and I don't want to oversimplify because there are many exceptions and these principles overlap and blend at certain places, but the more first ray and third ray types will approach the Ageless Wisdom differently. It'll be, they conceptualize things, and sometimes they can just read things and conceptualize it, whereas the second ray student, which can also do that, sometimes likes to have something in the so-called real world, if I am to use a misnomer, something that they can pull into their meditation. In other words, the mantra is, if I can see it, I can duplicate it on the high mental level. If I can't see it, it's more difficult. Sort of a...
I have a comment, Duane.
Yes.
I was just reading throughout many of in the Tibetan teachings where he says, you know, whether it's a symbol or a mantra, that the power from it comes from the ability to, just like you're saying, visualize the outcome. And with whatever meditative exercise you're doing, that when you visualize in the mind's eye, it is a tangible thing. It's not just an imagination. It's not just because it's a thought form, and energy follows thought. So we're working with subtle energy, and for it to have direction, and like you're saying, movement, that visualization is so key. And some traditions emphasize it more than others, but throughout the Tibetans' work, you know, it's re-emphasized that this is only effective, basically, including like with the Great Invocation. You know, what makes the Great Invocation effective is not just repeating the words, but visualizing the effect of the words, visualizing the energies flowing into the centers. And so that's right on. And it looks like we have a question. It's from Helen. She asks, Duane, does the intensity of the colors increase the vibrations accordingly?
Yes, I would say yes. However, when you look at these charts, it's a little deceptive because the colors become stronger and more luminous, but unless you have the apparatus of perception, they will appear vague. They will appear distant. So yes, the higher you go, the more lighted substance you are given to work with. And that is really the basis of initiation, the ability to enter into light, as we shared earlier, and within that light, find greater light. Good question. Thank you, Helen.
You also have a hand up.
Okay.
Go ahead, please, Yvonne.
Duane, on this little figure, the human being, I'm not understanding the colors of these chakras. They're not the ones I'm used to. I'm used to having red from the bottom, then orange, then yellow, then green, then blue, then violet. And so I don't understand these colors on this little human being.
This is a very good question. If you go on the internet and you ask the question, what are the colors of the chakras, you will have 500 different charts flash before you, and they will all be different. And of course, the question is, well, how do we know what the real colors are of the chakras? And I have taken my cue from what HPB said in The Secret Doctrine in her private letters to students, and it, from the works of Dual Cool. And again, I don't assert they're right, but if you take the little human figure before us now, you'll see if you look at the disc behind the head, you'll see that ray one is red. This is circular, forget the chakras. Ray one is red, ray two is blue, ray three is green, ray four is yellow, ray five is orange, ray six is rose, and ray seven is violet. And depending on your computer screen, there can be variations of that. And now that is not the entire wisdom on color. And it would take way too long to go through the esoteric colors which are given here and the exoteric colors, colors from the previous solar system, colors that are reversed when they hit the astral plane. They become just the opposite of what they are. Colors of your own auric field, that when these different rays impact your three lower rays in their unique coloring, the personality ray, its coloring, the soul ray and its coloring, you get these mutated colors that can sort of make it difficult, at least in certain early stages of perception, of exactly which one is what and what they're doing. But don't be dismayed because of these differences, because when the time is right and your meditations are powerful, these different colors will reveal themselves to you in all their glory and all of their luminosity. So I apologize if that's not a good answer, but
no, I think that's a good answer. I'll just pay attention to the color of the spheres as you explain them. They follow the color of the rays.
And we're going to go into this in greater detail.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for a very good question. Okay, now I'm going to give a practical demonstration of the law of correspondence in the law of analogy. And I would just point out that the Tibetan says the law of correspondence is exact, and the law of analogy is a generalization, just for clarification as we move into this. There's a wonderful quote that I'm going to read, unless I have a volunteer who would like to read this rose triangle quote, and I'm going to bring it up so it's a little clearer. Do I have any volunteers who'd like to read this?
I'll read it, Duane.
Thank you.
These forces are symbolized to the manipulating master by a triangle. In the old commentary, it says, quote, "The master throws himself under the liberating law of sacrifice into the vortex of the astral life of the one to whom our Lord relates himself with humble joy. And as the master works, there forms before his eyes a triangle of force in shades of varying rose. By his magnetic power, he concentrates the energy required. Then, through this triangle of force, as through an open door, he sends the potency of love into our planet. Until his cycle ends, he thus must work."
The next image that we're going to see is of seven colored ring with a rose triangle passing down through an astral vortex. And so what we're going to see is visually this description that the Tibetan has just outlined. And keep in mind, it's a relationship, at least as I interpret it, which may not be entirely correct. It's the master receiving this rose energy from the planetary logos, from the solar logos. And it's, well, the question that's often asked is, how are these alignments made? What is the vehicle of transmission? And when we study rose light, we realize it's a part of our astral nature here as human beings. But what we don't often understand is that when that astral life is purified via the direction of the mind and the soul, that astral body can begin to sieve impressions when it penetrates the first, second, and third subplanes coming from above down, from very, very high sources of inspiration and spiritual recognition. And because to finish this sort of this analogy, this law of correspondence that we've just outlined between the masters, the planetary logos, and the solar logos, looking from above down, we can say the master, although the master doesn't have an astral body as we understand the term, he or she does work with astral energy in their ashram. And it doesn't matter if they're a first ray master or a fifth ray or a seventh ray. Every master has predominant rays that they work with, but they have the seven subsidiary rays of each one of those rays. And that's how they all communicate amongst themselves through the sub rays, even though they respectively are the head of a given ashram with a certain number. We say ray 1, 2, 3, or 4, or whatever. So looking above down, the master distributes this astral energy to his different groups, starting obviously with the most advanced. And then his group distributes through the advanced initiates or advanced disciples in those groups to lesser disciples. And then the lesser disciples in turn distribute this rose astral energy out into the ranks of humanity. So even though there are gaps in this continuity from the highest levels to the lowest, to those who live at the higher levels, there is no break. They can send these redemptive forces down through the vortex, through these different triangles, right down through their distribution agents. And this is why the new group of world servers and triangle work is so important, because this is where the rubber meets the road. This is where this redemptive Devic energy coming from these very, very high sources finally can do transformative work right out in the so-called real world, where it's needed most of all. So let's look at the image that represents that. And okay, so you really have a ring, and it's not well represented, but that ring is the seven rays. And in as you follow the vortical movement down the throat with the triangle, you're contacting three different levels of astral energy, but all linked through the law of correspondence with that rose light. As an artist, it's impossible to duplicate anything that profound, but I struggled nevertheless to do some vague representation because I hadn't seen anything out there. And had I would have let them do it. Are there any questions concerning this image? Because the seven rays, as we're going to demonstrate as we move through this, not only in this session but others, is really a ring of seven bands of colored light. That's how the Tibetan has asked us to see the seven rays. That's how the masters see the seven rays. Are there any questions or comments up to this point?
I don't see any hands or questions yet.
Okay. Another one of my favorite quotes by the Tibetan. Disciples, during the early stages of their training, are apt to regard energy as a pool or a reservoir upon which they can learn to draw, thus appropriating a quota of that energy for their need, their service, and their use. But energy is fluid and in motion. We live in a veritable sea of moving forces, qualified in countless ways and conditioned by countless minds. So again, one of the purposes of this work is to take the foundational study and research that we've all done and put it into something that involves motion. And we have some animations coming up, but let's just take this one first. What you're looking at is the law of supplementary seven seen visually. DK says that the whole grand panorama can be expressed through an infinity of sevens. You have the one, which is pure being, pure abstract, which is almost impossible to fully understand at our stage of development, but we do understand it as identification with the will or first causes. And then it expresses itself through the seven rays, primarily through the first three rays of the upper triad, rays 1, 2, and 3, and then the four subsidiary rays. But if you look at this, I want you to imagine dropping a pebble in a still pool and seeing those waves ripple out. What you're looking at is a mandala of the seven rays, where in the very center you have represented the seven rays. They're sort of clustered. It almost looks like the birds of a wing or a series of round circles that are somewhat flared. If you look carefully to the next series of rings, that is a reflection of that original seven. And then the next one out, going from the center outward, is another representation of those seven, and then another, and then another, and another. And they go on infinitely down into manifestation. And occultly, if you're looking up, they go on infinitely, the septenary groupings, up into the infinite levels. So this is a wonderful chart because it shows in a very simplistic way that it's sort of like a fractal. For those of you who have really been moved by either the new holographic work or the new fractal revelations, you know that in a fractal, you can take one little corner. And if you can see my cursor, in a fractal, you can take this band way out here, which is barely visible, and my cursor is sort of circulating, and that will help you move to a bigger fractal. And if you can understand this fractal, when my cursor once again is circulating, it'll help you understand this fractal. And then this fractal, then of course, the original parent. In other words, every ray, however diminished, if you're looking at, once again, my cursor, and the outer periphery, every ray life or every plane life has built into it every one of the other rays and planes in miniature. And when you go forward through initiation and penetrate these higher levels, you're simply expanding the base from which you first discovered these rays, which is within yourself, within your personality. And this, of course, is the reason why at the entry of all mystery schools, you have the statement, man, know thyself. Because by knowing yourself, you have begun the long journey home towards original causes. The break between these threads, these shells, these circular energies, the break is more in our perceptions than in reality. And it was this very thought that prompted the Tibetan in his wonderful works on building the Antarkarana Bridge. Many, many pages of magnificent work of building, where at the end he says something to the effect, but of course you know this is all an illusion. And you go, what? And then he further qualifies it by saying, but it's because humanity, you more or less are caught in the illusion. We, the masters, are not. And so these are large thought forms that are creative that help build these bridges in the early technical side so that later on you can break free from the lower mind and just soar into the very principles that the Tibetan and other masters have simply outlined. Okay, are there any questions on this image?
We have a comment, and I'm not so sure it's not from some of your earlier stuff, but
okay.
Joe says, is it possible that the colors we wear from day to day reflect the ray most prominent in ourself from day to day? I have to say that I read to some extent the mood of an individual based on their color
yes,
choice.
I think in all fairness, I would say yes, but I would qualify it in this way. We have many colors because we have a etheric ray, astral ray, lower mental ray, solar ray, the divine ego on its own plane. And these colors can manifest themselves at different times and under different circumstances. And one of the areas of research that's coming as we move into the age of Aquarius is exactly what these rays are, what their notes are, what the colors are, what their vibrations, their numbers are, and to use them in the meditative state as the scientist works alchemically in their laboratory to produce magical results. So sometimes if I'm painting the house, I might throw a certain color t-shirt on, and I wouldn't want another esotericist in the community to think, oh, he's wearing his violet shirt, so he must have a seventh ray this or whatever, because there is much circumstances that sort of stimulate us to wear certain colors. And this is also true of music. As you search for your particular note or your series of notes, it will be reflected in the musical genre that you are attracted to. But there are many exceptions. Sometimes when you come home from a hard day at work, you want something soothing with violins. When you get up in the morning and you're still half asleep, you might want Beethoven's Fifth. You know, so again, take what I'm saying with a grain of salt. But, H.P. Blavatsky, excuse me, in her Secret Doctrine teachings to her students, her unpublished letters, suggests to her students that they get colored string or yarn that matches the star, the heavenly man or star upon which they were born. And in the context, it's really talking about the solar angel or the divine soul. And to wrap that thread or yarn with that color that you think it is on your finger and wear it all day long, because it will give you an impetus and a reminder that behind the veil stands this egoic solar angel that is radiant with light and also radiant with sound, palpitating, scintillating. These are key words that the Tibetan uses. Okay, are there any other comments on that?
I don't see any yet.
Okay, we've talked about the infinities of seven. This is this number 20 that I'm going to pull up right now is the very center of number 18 that we just saw, the pebble I mentioned dropping into the reservoir, or into the still water, I should say. This is the very center of it. And it's a very powerful symbol, because when you look at it closely, you not only see the representation of the seven rays, but the way that it came out in Adobe Photoshop, and I would like to say that some of these images I crafted over years of slave labor is not accurate. Some of these just sort of came by accident. And when I studied them with greater reflection, like this one before us, I thought, wow, that's really interesting. The three primary rays, 1, 2, and 3, that you can see numbered here, they're abstract. And they're like the eyes of God that have not been fully revealed, because they exist in causal levels. But from that unseen triad comes the four lesser rays, which is 4, 5, 6, and 7. And those are the eyes of God, or the rays that are more prominent and more available to humanity to fully understand. Now, when you become aware of your soul, you're moving into those three abstract levels, 1, 2, and 3. And you can, of course, perceive many variations of that. And remember that the seven rays are really represented by seven great Davic lords who are driven by the will of even greater beings than themselves. And that's why the divine jiva, or the soul ego, is often referred to as the solar angel. It is a Davic form of life that is attempting to fuse more intimately with the other parallel evolution, which is the human evolution, which the rays 1, 3, 5, 7 are more dominant, and the Davic rays 2, 4, 6 are more dominant. But having said that, the Devas work along all 7 ray lines, and humanity, men and women, they can also work, obviously, along all of the 7 ray lines. But it's this fusion. And when you study the rays in the planes, which we will at some further point, you'll see that as the rays pass through the planes, you have the meeting of the third aspect of divinity with the second aspect, and this is where light flashes forth. The second aspect of divinity, which is the consciousness aspect, boots up the third aspect and makes it more vibrant and radiatory and allows it to evolve. And yet, the ray is given certain characteristics and traits by passing through the plane. Okay, so let's go to the next image. Now, we're going to try to do an animation here shortly, and I'm just going to say that the animation we're going to share, hopefully with some music, it's a little difficult because we're working with only half of the different technologies that we need, but we'll fake it nevertheless. Now, I want you to look at this image. You see the numbers 1, 2, and 3. The first image on the far left is the 7 rays, 1 through 7. But if you look carefully, I think I'm going to enlarge that just to make it a little bit more available. Okay. Each of those 7 rays has 7 sub-rays. All the rays are in motion. So when you move visually to number 2, the image in the center, that is those 7 rays with their 7 sub-rays that's beginning to talk and to come into the influence of rotary motion. And then, of course, the last one is when they're spun in Adobe Photoshop at high speed through advanced rotary motion. And it's interesting because it looks like an eye, that yellow, which is, of course, humanity's 4th ray. 4th is a good representation of humanity being in an intermediary between the lower kingdoms and the higher kingdoms. But that will have to wait for another session. So again, looking at number 2, what you're going to see next is number 2 animated with music. You're going to see the 7 rays doing this cyclic spiral, sort of a sinuously twisting. And in my opinion, it brings the observer much closer to these rays on their own plane. So I want the group to go into a reflective place where you're taking several deep and even breaths. We're going to do a little mini meditation here. And just breathe into this image. Just let the colors wash over you. Feel yourself expanding beyond the rings pass not, to go back to our opening image, of the lower mind and drawing down the intuitive part that is so powerful in this image. And Rose is going to technically shift us to that. The music is from Gerard.
Duane?
Yes, I was muted, sorry.
Oh, you've got a comment from Leia that was brilliant. She's got goosebumps.
Oh.
And
well, thank you, Leia.
And Diana asks, can all of these planes and subplanes merged, fused during these movements and dance?
Yes and no. And I'm going to stop any music, but I'm going to begin the animation one more time. And I'm going to sort of relate a few things. What you have here is the seven rays that, rather than being stacked one upon the other like dinner plates, they are, of course, put under the influence of the spiral motion. And each ray maintains its integrity. In other words, you can see the red is the first ray, the blue is the second, the green is the third ray, yellow fourth, but they overlap. They interpenetrate and they blend along their edges. Plus, when they do these turns and they're opaque or transparent, you begin to understand, as the Tibetan says in Cosmic Fire, that when you want to understand these different septonets, these different hierarchies, you have to understand that they are wheels within wheels and within wheels. And they're all turning at different speeds, and they're all qualified by certain colors and certain notes and often certain geometric forms. What we have here is a very simplified version, and it's actually not even occultly correct because it doesn't show the right cycles that the different rays go through, because the different rays have their prescribed cycles. But it's only meant to give, to loosen the observer's lower mind and to get a sense of the rays, as we earlier quoted from the Tibetan, to be fluidic. Now notice when you watch this, the leading ray is the second ray. It's the blue. It's way out sort of in front, and it sort of leads all the rest. Well, I want the observer to imagine that these are all human and or Devic monads, and they're spiraling through their evolution. And the reason why the blue is leading is because we reside in a second ray solar system. And as DK has pointed out, it's easier for a second ray monad to respond to that call, to that pull, to that path of return, because it's in its natural element. If you have a first ray, a third ray monad, and this is somewhat true of the different souls, it's going to be a little harder because you're not in your natural environment. But again, I say that knowing that even if you have a third ray monad or a first ray monad, you can have all the other equipment that allows you to fully participate in a second ray solar system. Okay, good. Are there any other comments or questions? Yes.
Yes, Asha says the combination of the music and the visual really stirred her heart and brought tears to her eyes. I think you did what you set out to do. You busted all of our preconceived concrete mental images, and you opened it way up for us.
Well, thank you. I am deeply moved when others are moved, because what I would like to create through this series of webinars is what the Tibetan calls entry into the group feeling nature. And on first hearing of that, many esotericists sort of shrink, or they are a little cautious, because we're taught rightfully that the emotional body can often hold us back to greater progress. But what I have found through my research and experience in life, even though that is basically true on a certain level, that there are three higher subplanes to the astral that really relate to the soul. They have a link to the soul, and that when your interior concentration is powerful enough, you will feel the energy behind these symbols. This is not some great work of art of mine. This is a hierarchical symbol, however limited it's been reproduced. And when you look at it with an open mind and an open heart, it will affect you, and you will occasionally be moved to tears. And that simply demonstrates to me that it's working. The ageless wisdom teachings are working on all of us in different ways, and we've certainly all over thousands, if not millions of years, shed tears of sadness and sorrow. And now is the time, through the right use of the mind and the connecting with the soul body, to be moved with tears of joy. And again, that indicates a Devic force entering into your auric field, and it's opening you. It's opening you. Rumi said it most eloquently when he said, after being a scholar for his entire life in building this wonderful university, which is so important, he said, "You come to our community and we will open you." And people just would shake their heads. What does he mean? Open. It's not something you can easily categorize with the spoken word or even the written word. But anyway, good. Thank you for sharing that. Are there any other comments?
Yes, we have a couple of them. I want to start with Leah first because she wants to know if there's any way we can access a copy of the moving image. And so I think it's a good time to mention that we will be making the slides available and it will have a link so that people can go later and look at that again on their own, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. So that's one. And Tiffany says, how can we truly distinguish between soul ray and personality ray?
Well, that's a good question. And I would say, first of all, Michael Robbins, who has spent his entire life, perhaps many lifetimes, studying the rays, has written volumes on these subjects. And you can take the PIP test, you can read where he describes what it would be like to have a ray along this line, personality or soul ray. And it's a wonderful series of teachings, to say nothing of what he's ongoing doing on a regular basis. And join a group that has that as a subject of conversation. How do we explore and understand our rays? How do they reveal themselves? How do we know the difference between them? And I would say, as my last comment on that question, by their intensity. When the soul begins to pour down through the lesser instruments, you will feel a sense of elevation and joy and bliss and mental comprehension that will just sort of, to quote the proverb or the proverbial cliche, it'll knock your socks off. You'll know. And personality ray is very, very powerful also, but it really relates more to the three lower rays. It's the integration of the three lower rays. So if you're purifying your body, elevating your desire nature, and purifying your emotions, and doing studies on these ageless wisdom teachings, you are on the right path. Thank you.
And she says, thank you. And then Asha says, this is so validating. As I've been struggling to rise above emotions and enter occult studies. So I think that refers to your comment a few minutes ago about using the higher astral energies, which my understanding is they're a reflection of Buddhi. So
yes, absolutely.
The higher you raise your consciousness, the more pure that astral reflection is going to be of that Buddhi.
Yes, and I'm going to say something very controversial, but I'm going to substantiate it in great detail when I give my yearly presentation at the USR conference this year coming up. And that is that the masters will work through your astral body if it's on the first subplane, which is, of course, the highest and the purest, and you have built in the mental matter that allows you to understand the process, and you're becoming soul infused. And that will have to be further qualified at some later date because it's such a controversial statement. Okay, good. Any other comments?
No, I don't see any at this time.
Excellent. Okay, I apologize for the lack of coordination between the music and the visual. We're slowly getting it together here, and it's forcing us to talk about breakthroughs. Okay, let's see. Okay, now, here are the seven rays in their most simplified form, and we're sort of regressing here, but we're only stepping back so that we can take an even greater leap. Here you have the seven ray lives and their esoteric colors, and we're going to explore them in many, many forms. Let me just enlarge this a little bit. Now we're moving the seven rays rather than like dinner plates, more in a circular form. The second ray solar system is the very central point. Now we know outside of this solar system, there are vast cosmic rays that are affecting us that should not be confused with these seven rays in our solar system. But this is our solar system. You have the second ray dominating, and then you have rays 1, 2, and 3, the triad, the law of the triads being broken down, and out of those three upper triadic forces, then you have the seven rays. And once again, the seven rays are broken down into another seven rays. And are there any questions with this simple chart?
Not yet.
Okay, excellent. Now,
oops,
here's another chart.
We got one.
Okay, that's good.
Let
it go. Yes.
Wayne, can you go back to that chart? So you're saying that every person has, whether they're on ray 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, we all have seven sub-rays.
Absolutely.
On each ray, whether it's personality, physical, mental, emotional, or soul ray, each of those has seven sub-rays.
Exactly.
Which is why it sort of makes it confusing to figure out what the main one is.
Well, it is.
Yeah, I didn't know about that each ray has seven sub-rays. I thought only the masters did.
No, we have seven sub-rays, and that's how we have the potential to develop all the seven rays to their fullest over time, long periods of time, of course, because the germ is inherently with those seven sub-rays.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, now here's another chart, which is very similar to the others. I'm trying to give the observer many views of the seven rays, all ultimately moving towards animation or movement. Okay, the one on another level is the first ray. But let's just say hypothetically in our solar system, the second ray is really the one point we're moving towards of ultimate fusion. But we do know that to get there, you need to develop your first ray. So these charts do have inherent limitations. Okay, moving to the right, you have the triad. Ray 1, red, 2, blue, 3, green. But notice the mutated colors that you see when you bring them together, and like the flower of life pattern or the Vesica Pisces, they begin to give off. In other words, if you have a second ray soul and you have a third ray personality, you're going to have blue and green, you're going to dominate those two rays. But there are going to be places where they're going to be mutated colors where they overlap, and you will experience those colors and you'll say, oh, was that second ray or was that third ray? And this is a science that's just becoming to the forefront as we move into the age of Aquarius, the scientific recognition of color and sound, vibration and number. Okay, four square, the rays of aspect, how they overlap and blend. And then, of course, bottom left, when all seven of them are together, to the next right, we have initial rotary motion, where, remember, the dot in the center is foha. It is cosmic electricity in its unmanifested state, and it is the galvanizing power of all the rays, because the rays are Devic substance and they're the consciousness aspect, whereas Foha is the first ray. It is unmanifested, and it, to quote HPB, drills holes in space, drives like a fiery whirlwind. If you've studied the stanzas of Dien, is the will of the Father that sets in motion all these different lesser states of motion. And rotary is only one. Then you have, and it's the third aspect, then you have cyclic spiral, which is the second, and then, of course, progressive motion, which is the will aspect. So just to show another variation. Now, here is a picture of the rays in the plains. And again, it's a rather linear picture. It says shows the rays rotating north to south, and then the plains east to west. And the seven rays are given here in their colors, red, blue, green, yellow, orange, rose, and violet. Now, what you see in the seven planes is their polar opposite. And I've written a commentary on this, and anybody who's interested would have to go to my website to get the commentary on the rays and planes and why I came to this conclusion and why I use these colors. And I can only say one thing, that they're the polar opposite colors of the rays, the plane colors here. But now you see an intricate weaving of the second and the third aspect of divinity. Any questions on this image?
We have a question on one of your earlier slides. I think it was two slides back. It's from Antoinette, and it says, would there be a reason for the sequence of the ray numbers and colors in the previous chart, the way it was placed?
This one?
Let me get her. Is that the right one, Antoinette? Oh, yes, she says.
Yes, okay. So her question was, is this the right sequence?
Would there be a reason for the sequence of the ray numbers and colors and the way that
they're
placed?
Yes, because not really. And as we go through this, you'll see I place them in their natural order later. 1, 3, 5, 7. 2, 4, 6. They're what are considered the feminine and the masculine descent or line of energy. Yeah, there's no particular importance other than ray 1 is red, ray 2 is blue, ray 4 is yellow. The numbers correspond to the rays, but they're not put in any particular order. They're actually put in sort of random, except for the outer periphery in the left. You see the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, good. Okay. DK says about the rotation of the rays and planes. Okay, the seven planes, likewise atoms, rotate on their own axis and conform to that which is required of all atomic lives. So in other words, what we're really looking at when we look at these images is almost like taking an orange that's spherical and taking off the peel and laying the peel flat on the surface. But in their natural organic state, they're revolving wheels that rotate, just as the latter part of this quote says, the seven spheres of any one plane, which we call subplanes, equally correspond to the system. Each has its seven revolving wheels or planes that rotate through their own innate ability due to latent heat, the heat of the matter of which they are formed. So just keep in mind that when we talk about the rays of the planes, we're talking about spherical lives. Now, this image that I'm showing you right now is the same identical image that we just saw, only I rotated it in Adobe Photoshop. It's the rays in the planes that are now being subject to the polarization of the first ray. And when that first ray descends down through the lower viscosities of the rays and planes, it causes this swirling motion. It causes this eddy, this sinuous twisting. And we're going to show that in greater detail coming up. Okay, so here's another image. This is the same image. This is the whirling of the planes of the solar system under high rotary speed. Now, if you look at the very center of this composition, you'll see that it's, let's put it this way. you can see that it's a vortex, but at the same time, you can see there are petal-like protrusions sticking out. And that's going to be one of the mysteries that we're going to try to work on, is how do the rays relate as petals to triangles and to the into different chakras. So this is what they would look like whirling. And as you look at the center, you begin to get the hint of cyclic spiral motion. In other words, the outer periphery is the third aspect of divinity, but always the impulse is to go in and to develop more powerful alignments. So as the vortex narrows, it becomes elongated and it penetrates to the next higher level through cyclic spiral motion. And then eventually in the center, not shown, would be that dark point of Fohat, which is symbolizes progressive motion. Okay, good. Here is another image. Yes.
You have a question from Asha. She says, is the absolute, which MDR talks about, beyond that rotating circle disk, or is it in that central black hole, or maybe is it a portal to the absolute?
Well, I think she's beautifully answered. By asking a highly intelligent question, she's already answered it. Yes, absolutely. And it would be pretentious on my part to assume I know what Michael is talking about when he uses the word pure being, because one just does not do that. But I would say yes on a superficial level, because it's where all things sort of retract into themselves, and you have the know-nothing of the Buddhist, the unborn, the uncreated. It's just pure Fohat, cosmic electricity, and that is at the center of all rotating disks. On matter what level, there's always some small or great aspect of Fohat or pure being. It drives the atom, it drives the solar angel, the monad on its own plane, and all of these other great whirling bodies and constellations. But until the third initiation, you can't honestly say with any sincerity that you fully or even partially understand that great principle. So here we have the seven rays and the seven planes depicted electrically. On the left, those are all the positive rays. And then on the right, you have the receptive. I don't like the word negative because it has certain connotations. So let's just say receptive. But even in the breakdown of the rays and the planes, which we're not going to do, you have positive and negative. Certain rays are positive and negative, or positive and receptive to other rays or planes. Okay, so we're going to skip down here a little bit and to a more experiential mode. And we will cover these images that I have skipped over. Now, we've described the rays in the planes. We've described the law of correspondence, the law of the septenary seven, the microcosm and the macrocosm. This next animation that we're going to view is probably, to me, one of the most powerful I've been exposed to in the last 40 years of work with occult images. And the reason for that is because it explains visually how a vortex is really, how a triangle or a chakra is simply a vortex in its early stages of development. And that is a very, very powerful statement. And it's one that you have to sort of see visually to grasp it intuitively. And I want the group to get into a little meditative, reflective mode as we move into this next image that Rose, I have it here. Actually, I have it, Rose. And I want you to we will analyze this on a more mental level, but let's just experience it in its wholeness right now, and then talk afterwards. So really, really breathe into this image and let it seep into all your auric fields. Here we have two rotating discs seen sort of sideways. And as we slowly observe it, it's sort of turning so that it has more of a frontal observation. Two different energies going in opposite directions. Perfect example of the rays in the planes. Notice in the very center, there's like electrical discharges as these two opposite forces try to neutralize each other. And because they can't, they create an entity that's built out of two different types of substance that appears to be one. Now see the petal formation? At certain speeds and under certain conditions, these two types of substance, the second and third aspect of divinity, create petals. And yet you're really looking at a vortex. Here comes the petal again. Now notice there are different numbers of petals each time. And that summarizes the whole entire chakra system. Each chakra has a number of petals, and they're often multiples of the one before it. It appears to be rotating to the right, then it appears to be rotating to the left, and then other times, it appears to be rotating in both directions. And our next session will involve the crosses and astrologically reversal of the wheel and how you're dealing with two different types of energy. First, you're going clockwise around the wheel, then you're going counterclockwise, and then later, according to the Tibetan, when you move on to the cardinal cross, you recognize the fullness of all the crosses and how that there's really three types of motion. There's clockwise, counterclockwise, and the dual revolution of both of them rotating at the same time, which reveals the point of abstraction in the center, which is Fohat or the Laya point. Okay, great. We're pretty close to coming to an end. Are there any questions up to this point?
I don't see any yet. I think everybody's still meditating on that lovely, lovely animation.
I apologize. Go ahead.
Please go ahead, Catherine.
Hi, Duane. I thought you started this beautiful animation saying it came from out of the triangle. But I saw a lot of the polarity, like a second and third aspect. Can you say more about that? I think I missed something.
Our whole system is dominated by duality or polarity, and it can be no other way. The seven planes and the seven rays are all a part of the cosmic physical plane, which when you look at the totality of things is just the outer garment of a great being of which we know nothing. So we will be dominated by duality for a long time, but here's the key, that becomes more subtle each initiation we undergo. And we don't have the time for me to show that on one of my charts, the basic five initiations that we're going to be going through, or seven or nine, depending on how you look at it. But that's a great question, and it may have to wait at a later time for a fuller and better explanation other than, yes, you will see duality here, because it's like, where does duality emerge from? It's like a weather system. You have hot and dry and cold and wet, and these two systems come together. But because they're so powerful, they can't cancel each other out. So what do? They turn upon each other. And turning upon each other, they create the vortex. And the vortex is a new dynamic formed out of two different types of substance or energy or force. And the rays and the planes are two different types of force. The planes are the third aspect of divinity, and the rays are the second. And when they interact, they create light. This is how light is born. This is how everything is created, through the interaction of that consciousness. Of course, all impulsed, hidden from behind secret chambers, the will of the Father, causing all this to take place. Any additional questions? Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you.
I don't see any right now. Yes. Asha asks, this is all in the manifested third dimension, right?
Yes. Well, in other words, we're using, we're trying to invoke 3D images here that will invoke the fourth dimensional perception. And the image cannot do that, but the image can stimulate the direction that you point your attention. Any other additional questions?
I don't see any.
Anyway, I apologize for sort of skipping around, but I would rather break my linear sequential tradition and give more to the group than follow my nifty little outlines. I have Venus and Virgo that really would only restrict. So if you don't get some of the theory and you don't get some of the mental outlines, which I've certainly given a lot, it's all right. All what we're looking for here is a participation, an ability to step out of the lower mind, knowing that you're going to step back into it, because we don't want to leave the lower mind. We just want to sort of put it in its rightful place to open up to more of a group sort of heart feeling, intuitive sort of experience.
Okay, Asha says, thank you, amazing and beautiful. And Barbara says, can we get printable copies of the symbol charts? Well, that will be in the slides.
Yes.
Which we'll be able to do. And like I said, you'll have the links to the animations that you had, right?
I appreciate everyone taking time from their busy schedules to come to participate and to make this possible, because it's a group field that we're building here and not trying to disseminate factual information that you can get directly yourself. So I send my love to the group and appreciate and look forward to additional sessions.
Well, thank you, Duane, and thank you, everyone. And we have a...
Okay, that's good.
Go ahead, please, Karen.
Okay. Oh, these were incredible images. Thank you so much. It's very, very wonderful to have this opportunity. And when I watched the, the first session on Makara, the animated pictures were pixelated, and I just wondered if it's my computer or if that's the way it would be.
That's a good question. And we're...
That's due to some of the limitations with GoToWebinar when you're trying to stream video. It's basically like a video. And if we had the updated professional version, which is very expensive, it does have a function for streaming that video so that it like pre-uploads it to the server. And then you would see it in the full glory that it really is. So it is definitely also a disappointment to Duane and I to see the recording, because we see it so much richer and fuller, which we want to give you that experience. And we're still working on trying to possibly find an alternative platform that allows for that. high quality to be transmitted over the webinar.
Yeah, because it's
I'm sorry, Karen. One of the things that we did as an alternative was we not only provided the PowerPoint of the slides, so you have the wonderful images, but also, I'm sorry, the PDF, which most people can access. We also provided the PowerPoint slides, which then had the live link in it that allowed you to go view several of those, or it actually had it had the video embedded in the PowerPoint, doesn't it, Rose? So that you could, from the PowerPoint, it's the only one that will allow you. It's the only thing that we provided there on Makara that will allow you to actually see the image, as I understand it, in the best quality.
Some of those, it's embedded in the PowerPoint, so you have to have PowerPoint to view it, whereas with the PDF, you're not going to see any of the animations. However, some of these videos, I don't know if on this particular one, they're too large to embed them into the PowerPoint itself, and we may find a way to upload them to like a hosting site like Hightail or something that will have a link to where then you can download the video itself.
Well, thank you. For me, who I'm a little bit technically declined, the answer is to watch it live.
Yes.
That's the best way for me.
Come visit us.
Yeah, so thank you so much.
Thank you. And we do need to upgrade this.
Yes, we're working on doing what we can to make it a better experience. So, okay, well, I don't see any more questions. So I will say goodnight to everybody. Thank you, Duane. Absolutely wonderful presentation.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Lots of love. Bye-bye.